This is just a quick message to say that the following podcast contains some strong language and adult humor. But with that out of the way, let's get on with the episode.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Theatre Podcast, the podcast for you if you love all things theatre. I'm Luke.
And I'm Tom.
And each episode we get together to chat to theatre professionals, immersion theatre artists and lovers of theatre in general.
Basically, our podcast aims to celebrate why theatre's so great with people that love theatre.
Exactly, and this week will be no different. And coming up, there'll be some of this.
And there was a moment as well where we kind of were like, oh gosh, like Oxford are going to remove the statue, then we're going to have nothing to do this play about. But I mean, they just refuse to take it down, so they keep us relevant.
There'll definitely be this.
The one thing that really touches me about the period is that it was really progressive and liberal for the standards back then. And then the Nazis came.
And even this.
The things that you don't know, the things that you can't plan for are often the best things and the yes. things that you end up keeping.
So thank you very much for tuning into this episode of the Talking Theatre Podcast. And, huh, well, let's just get on with the show, shall we?
Hi, mate. How are things?
Yeah, not bad at all. You know what? I've had a very theatre-filled couple of days and I've been very warm inside and loved. I went to see a couple of shows at the Lion and Unicorn Theatre. And I went to see Tethered by Chew Boy Productions, and I went to see Somewhere to Belong by the Sycorax Collective, and both were fantastic. And then I got to watch Don't Ask, Don't Get, Baby on live stream, on demand, and I had an absolute great time. It was fantastic.
Yes, absolutely. One of our guests from the first series, Alice Underwood, if you haven't yet seen it, did her, well, a one-woman show, I think you'd describe it.
It was fantastic.
At the Space, and from what I've seen, got exceptional reviews. So well done, Alice.
Won an award. It's now an award-winning debut
show.
That
is true.
So well done.
That is true. Well done, Alice. That is, we're all very proud of you here on the podcast, and hopefully that long may it continue. And we've also seen in the past week, and you've just spoke as we just before we started recording this, the Old Vic Connect shout outs. You have already started to connect with some people.
Yeah, it's been great. It's nice seeing the world piping up again and meeting people. And I mean, let's be honest, theatre Twitter never really shut up, but it's nice now to have a bit more connectivity. It's really nice to meet people and chat away and connect.
Absolutely. And we've actually got some people for you to actually get to know today. Some very new and very emerging artists, because we thought that with theatre coming back and this being a podcast which aims to kind of have its core demographic of listeners and audience in the young and emerging kind of field, that we would celebrate emerging artists actually this week. And we've got another one of these in a couple of weeks' time, because it is the start of the Camden Fringe Festival next week. So we thought the best way to kind of celebrate that and celebrate theatre's proper return in the fringe scene was to get some of those artists involved on. So please sit back and enjoy what is a little bit of a different episode for us this week, but we are sure that you will enjoy it. So yeah, this is our first Camden Fringe bonus episode. Brought to you by 1660 Theatre, In Bag Taste is a show that focuses on cannibalism, communism, capitalism and chaos, which is just a regular night in, really. Running at the Museum of Comedy on the 5th of August at 8:30, you can book tickets for In Bad Taste at the Camden Fringe website or, alternatively, on the Museum of Comedy website.
Our first guest today is an actor and writer of Essentially Black, Naomi Denny. Playing at the Water Rats Theatre between the 2nd and 4th of August, Essentially Black is set against the backdrop of the Rhodes Must Fall movement at Oxford University in 2016. Essentially Black follows the leader of the campaign, Jess, and her best friend Lydia, who are trying to decolonise their syllabus. In a play brought to you by Ambriel Productions, Naomi's debut play looks at what happens when race and elite universities collide. And we're pleased to say that Naomi is here with us now to talk a little bit more about it. So, hello, how are you doing?
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm good. I'm very excited to be here.
Good. It's a pleasure to have you. So first off, tell us a bit about the play itself and what sort of inspirations are, what it's about.
So I wrote this play in 2018. Originally, it was about the mixed race experience at elite universities, because I didn't feel like that was really the mixed race experience was talked about enough. And I was kind of looking for, it was kind of inspired by being told when I was a bit younger, probably a couple of years before that, there was Black Lives Matter marches going on. And someone had said to me that I shouldn't be going because of the fact that I was mixed race. I wasn't Black. I didn't understand and that sort of thing. And I understand where they're coming from because the mixed race experience is a different experience to the Black experience. So there's no kind of sugarcoating that. There is privilege you get as a mixed race person. The experiences you have are different. There is also other things that happen when you're mixed race that don't happen when you're Black. There is a lot of things to do with identity that we don't really, that I myself am always a bit like, I don't know where I am. This is great. But that's where kind of this piece started, was talking about protest and who has the right to protest. And I kind of started looking at different protests and why these protesters happened. And I came across the Roads Must Fall movement. And I thought, this is a really interesting type of protest, is kind of about statues and about, obviously in this past year as well, we've had all of these debates around statues and obviously what happened to the Colston statue in Bristol. This play was written before all of that happened. And it was kind of interesting as well, watching that go down in summer and kind of being like, okay. And there was a moment as well where we kind of were like, oh gosh, like Oxford are going to remove the statue, then we're going to have nothing to do this play about. But I mean, they just refused to take it down, so they keep us relevant. Obviously that's very problematic as well, as the fact that they as an institution just seem to not really, well, from the outside, I don't know everything about what goes on inside the university, obviously, but from the outside, it seems that they don't really want to acknowledge the hurt that it's causing and also the problematic nature of it. So that's really where that started. And Jess was originally also the other reason why this play was originally about the mixed race experience, was because at the drama school that I was doing it at, we didn't have a great deal of diversity in our year group, and we had to use the students that we had in our year group. So there was me, one other girl who was mixed race, and one girl who's Black, but they wouldn't let me use the girl who's Black for our show. So I was going, okay, cool. I'm doing a piece about diversity, but I have one mixed race girl and I have three other actors who are all white. And I was like, how do we make this work? And then I thought, what experience have I had that has fit into that? And I was like, oh, university. Because I'd gone to Durham University, which obviously is quite, if we're going to class them as elite universities, it's one of, you know, the old collegiate systems. It's been around for a very long time. And the majority of the student population there is white. And so, yeah, I started to think about university and how that had basically, how that experience had been. And it was originally written as a scratch piece. And then after we did it as a scratch, it was then done as a, we then applied to Pleasance Theatre Labs, and we got accepted to that, which was really exciting. At that point, I then adapted it to a full length piece and added more characters. And we were actually able to add this character of Lydia, who's brilliant. And I absolutely love having her in the play. I think it's such an important angle to also look at the way that Jess is treated and the way that Lydia is treated. They are two separate things. And yeah, so that, and now we're here at Camden Fringe, which is really exciting. We applied to Camden. Obviously, it was supposed to be done in 2020, but I'm actually really grateful for the extra time because it means that the script has got better. The actors know the parts more as well. We were doing Zoom reads, as everyone was over this past year. And I do think, like, all in all, I'm really excited about where it is right now and how it's going to be. I'm really excited about seeing how audiences react to it as well after this year as well. So, yeah.
That's really cool. A little bit extra time, I feel. Like everyone I've spoken to had a show that was meant to either go on earlier this year or sometime in 2020. They've been sort of, it's been gutting, obviously, because you want to get it on and move on to the next thing and sort of keep growing from there. But having a little bit of extra time just to fine polish everything is it's very welcome when it's something that's so close to sort of home and something that's very personal to the crew and everything. But yeah, so I mean, speaking of the whole process in general, what's the team like? Have you been together as a collective for a long time, or has it been sort of gradual bringing people in? And
yeah, it's been odd because, like, The cast has changed significantly since the first time we did it. The team themselves are great. I absolutely love them. And I love working with every single person in it. And like the first person, I guess, who came on board after the original scratch piece was Imogen, who's our producer, who is incredible, who I absolutely love. We have a great working relationship. And we found each other on Twitter. And it was one of those old BitConnect sort of thing. And we have a great relationship in terms of like, she is very good at kind of, I'm very much someone who will be like, let's do this and this and this and this and this and this. And she's like, no. So she's really good at that, and she's wonderful to work with. And she's very much someone who, especially, I originally wasn't in the piece, so it's only this time round that I'm playing Jess, because the person who was playing Jess has had a scheduling conflict, got a tour, and I was like, obviously off you go.
Fair enough.
fair enough, as far as excuses go, that's quite good. And so then we were gonna reopen the casting process, and Imogen turned to me and was like, well, you know the part better than literally anyone else, so why don't you do it? And I was like, oh. But in the end, ended up doing it. And Emily, who we have to play Lydia, is incredible. She came in to do our Pleasance Labs when we started doing Pleasance Labs.
Yes.
And she's absolutely wonderful. She's such a great actor. And I think what I love to do as well as a writer is really get the actors to have influenced their characters. So we have a girl called Charlie who's playing Laura, who's an Italian exchange student, and a lot of the experiences and the things that Laura says, Charlie herself has said in multiple occasions. Like, there's a whole section where Laura goes off about Domino's pizza, and that entire interaction came because I was really struggling to find the voice of Laura, and I texted Charlie and I went, can you just send me a voice note telling me how you feel about Domino's pizza? And she literally sent back like 3 minutes worth of a rant. And so there are certain things. And then there's a character of Alice who he's a proper ally, and he's very eco-friendly and into upcycling. And Becca, who plays her, is such a wonderful, gentle soul who also has those sort of traits to her as well. And we also have Lauren, who is playing the waitress and the professor, who is just such a wonderful, wonderful actor to have in the room. She is one of the people who, originally that role was also played by someone else, but that person also had to go off and do a tour. And instantly I was like, I'm getting Lauren in because she's incredible. And it's quite a comedic role. And Lauren is one of those actors who will just throw herself fully into it. And our last final character is Johnny, who is played by Max, who has recently literally just come in the past couple of weeks. Who's wonderful. And yeah, the entire cast is honestly just incredible. And the creative team, we have our new director, who's called Caroline, who is honestly, like, I'm so excited to be working with her. She's recently graduated from Lambda, and her mind just works in the most incredible way. And one thing that our company is so kind of passionate about, that Imogen and I both share, is kind of working with emerging artists, graduates, and that sort of thing. Because it's all well and good working with established artists, and that's great. But us ourselves are both quite emerging as artists. We want our work to reflect that as well. And so everyone we're working with is an emerging artist, and we try and, as well, one thing that I'm really passionate about, Imogen's really passionate about, everyone is really passionate about, is working with people from underrepresented groups. So obviously this play is about the Black mixed race experience. It doesn't escape me that there are two acts of color in this play. There only can be, annoyingly, which kind of really frustrates me in a way, because I'm like, give it more. But the whole point is that these two people are isolated in their experience. Every piece I write tends to, it centers voices of people of color, because I just feel like those are voices that they're not missing exactly, but they're unheard a lot of the time. So that's something that I'm really excited about.
If anyone wants to keep up to date with what Essentially Black is doing and what Ambriel Productions are doing, where can they find you guys?
So we're on Twitter at Ambriel Prods, and we are on Instagram at ambriel.productions. If you want to find out any more information about the play, there's our posters and our cast announcements, and we're going to be announcing some more members of the creative team as well really soon as well, which should be really exciting.
And just for everybody at home, just give us a reminder, Naomi, where people can watch your play and when it's on, how to get tickets.
Yeah, so the play is on from the 2nd to the 4th of August at the Water Rats venue. It's in King's Cross. It's super close to the station. It's at 7:15 p.m. and tickets can be bought via the Camden Fringe website, or if you go to our socials, there is a direct link to our ticket page as well.
Amazing.
Brilliant.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. It sounds fantastic, and best of luck with rehearsals and the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Brought to you by Happy Happy Productions. Paperboy is a show about two self-proclaimed journalists. Matt and Matthew are the founders of the newspaper The Desperate Times. Supported by their long-suffering assistant Phoebe, they think they're the dog's bollocks. Although she'd probably say that in itself is a load of bollocks. Paperboy is a comedy exploring the dark sides of lad culture and toxic masculinity, and looking at when the conversation goes from just a bit of banter to something more serious. If you want to watch this, make sure to catch it at the Lion and Unicorn Theatre from the 5th to the 7th of August at 8:30 p.m. And if you want to buy your tickets, go via the Camden Fringe website or the Lion and Unicorn Theatre website.
Our second guest today is an actor and creator of Fabulous 1933, Michael Trowther. Premiering at the Canal Café Theatre between the 8th and the 14th of August, Fabulette 1933 is a one-person queer musical featuring music, ideas, and lives classified as denigrate by the Nazis, all under the musical direction of Sarah Morrison. And we're pleased to say that Michael is here with us now to talk a little bit more about it. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Hi, both. I'm very well. Thank you.
So I guess let's go jump straight into it then, Michael, and tell us a little bit, by telling us a little bit about the show and how all the ideas for the show came about.
Yeah, the show is actually, well, the idea is, or the setting is in 1933, obviously, February 1933, when the Nazis decided to close all cabarets down, or actually all venues that promoted immorality. The background actually was that I was thinking about doing a show and was just like thinking about my castability, my background. I'm Swiss originally, German is my mother tongue, my native language. And that's how I came up with this topic. Also because I, in a contract on a cruise ship where I worked performing, I had to sing Willkommen from Cabaret, the musical. And I never actually liked the song back then. But the people loved it, and I got so many compliments, and they were like, yeah, you're perfect for that part. And that's what like made me think about like, yeah, maybe something that direction, but I actually didn't know anything about the period. And that was 2018 when I started researching the time. And then I just discovered like what an interesting time, like the time between the wars in Germany was, that it was a very progressive time. People and ideas were like from today's standard quite modern in certain areas as well, at least. I mean, obviously it was 100 years ago and maybe not everything would be like, yeah, that's now totally what we would do now, but just like when it comes to gay rights, for instance, or in general just rights, human rights, that not everywhere back then were like that common. It was a very progressive time, and also censorship was abolished in theater, which led to a lot of political songs that were written at the time. And I discovered all these songs and I really felt like I wanted to put a show together. So I first started with just gathering songs and then just tried to come up with a story where I could use the song. So that was the initial version, which I then, now I had a lot of time, thanks to the pandemic, to go back into it and actually chuck out a lot of things again and just improve the plot and write original music to it as well. So it's now a mix of original music and music from the period that deals with that time. It is set at the closing night of a cabaret, but there's a lot of flashbacks on the life of the MC, which is the main character, the only character that is live on stage, and just like deals with like what this time really was. And maybe is, I think Cabaret is a great musical, but it's Fabulette 1933 is in a sense a bit more authentic just because it features songs from the period and not just composed songs just for the musical.
So is it a 50-50 sort of split between original and classical ones? Or?
Yeah, it's pretty much 50-50. I just felt at some point to make the story work, I need to write original music, because otherwise it's just a random collection of songs and a really weird story that I have to like build to get from one song to the next. So that's like, I just decided in the end, which songs are really important to me, which in my eyes are also really important to the period. There is a gay anthem that was written in 1920, which is actually quite impressive that at the time, a song was written that dealt with queer pride and fighting for LGBTQ rights, obviously in today's terms. And another song that just dealt with deals with the rising power of the Nazis that I also really wanted to have in there. And then, there's other songs that I just needed to put in there because I wanted to go the story in a certain way. And also I tried to keep it light enough and not to like be political throughout and not to be like, to have funny moments. And that's kind of like the difficult thing with a period where we all know where it ends and it can only end in one way. So like the original version was like quite depressing in the second half, like the whole second half. And that was also like the feedback that I got. So I really felt like, okay, I need to work on that too. Still, it has to end the same way, but I have to have light moments in there. So that's how I decided to just put some other songs in there as well.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. And just saying that in terms of that period of history, isn't something you recently... it wasn't until 2018 that you sort of started looking into it.
Yeah.
And you sort of briefly touched on sort of heritage and past and everything going into it. Is there sort of one key factor that sort of really resonated with you going into this sort of whole process that's something that you particularly really wanted to get across? Or is it just an interesting fact that really got struck a chord with you due to sort of your history or something?
Well... There
that was a horrible question, worded really awfully.
No. I think I know what you mean. There are a lot of like interesting individual facts, but for me, I think the one thing that really touches me about the period is that it was really progressive and liberal for the standards back then. And then the Nazis came and the Second World War happened, Hitler happened, and it didn't just happen. It was like, it has ended in a dictatorship, but it started as a democratic decision. The Nazi government was elected in what seems to be quite a liberal time. And I think it just shows how fragile achievements of a society are. And it often doesn't happen overnight. It happens step by step. And the change might look drastic when you look back and you cannot really understand like how you got there. But if you just look at the whole thing, you can see like by taking one step after another backwards, you just basically have a big leap at some point. And that's why I feel like it's interesting and it's very current in my eyes that, people just have to be aware of what's happening around them and that not everything that is here right now is guaranteed. And it's maybe rights in every aspect. I mean, I'm calling it a queer one-person musical, and it obviously has like a queer story, but all achievements of a society are very fragile, and unless you're really aware of what's happening around them and probably react and speak up when something happens, they might be gone soon.
I think that's really interesting, and I think even just listening to you now talking about that, I think there will be a lot of resonance actually with that story.
Also, when it comes to queer history, it's very often, I find, maybe different in Germany, but here it's very often quite British centered. And then this period, which was often, or in many areas, quite far ahead of what was the case here, is often forgotten. And that's why I also, like, why I'm excited to like perform all of these songs in English. There's like partly they have been translated into English before, and partly I have translated them, which was great because at some point I reached out to the Trust. Misha Spolyansky was one of the big composers of the time. And I reached out to the Misha Spolyansky Trust, and then his grandson got in touch with me and really also helped me out with providing sheet music that I couldn't find anywhere else. And then also approved the lyrics that I wrote in English, because I really wanted people to understand what songs said. And these are the really like encouraging parts of the whole journey, because it's just like, in the end, I feel like I'm just a random person who has an interest in this time. And then you try to reach out to people. You don't hear back from everybody, but then suddenly you do hear back from somebody. And it really is encouraging.
So then, to kind of round things up then, Michael, where can people book or follow the work or know more about the show? What kind of things how can people follow it?
I have a website for the show, which is fabulette.com, where I have a trailer, some background information and so on. And then because I've been working on the subject matter for quite a while, my Instagram account is really dedicated to subject matter. So that's at Michael Traufer on Instagram. And from my website, there's also a link where people can book tickets via the Camden Fringe or via the Canal Cafe Theatre.
Amazing. Brilliant. Well, it's been great to hear more about the show and the history, not only of the show's production, but how, you know, history itself has very much influenced the whole process this far. And we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Juliet and Romeo is brought to you by Giggle Riot. It is live at the Cockpit on the 9th, 10th, 11th and 11th of August, and upstairs at the Gatehouse Theatre between the 17th and the 22nd of August. For more info and tickets for both shows, they are available at the Camden Fringe box office online or Google search Juliet and Romeo Camden.
Our third guest today is the director of Half Pace Theatre's Festa, Megan Brewer. Showing in the Cockpit Theatre between the 13th and 14th of August, Festa is a story of Faust Kretchen, who learns that she's fated to be just another puppet in a game of heaven and hell, and forcibly takes her life back into her own hands. Devised by a majority female and non-binary ensemble, Festa follows Gretchen as she fights to reclaim her agency, even if it means tearing the world around her to pieces. And here with us now to tell us a little bit more about it is Megan. So hello, Megan. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. How are you?
Very well. So, I mean, let's just start off and hear more about the show. So what's Festa about?
So we're still devising Festa, which means that everything I say to you could be a complete lie, which is the most exciting thing about devised theater. Festa, it's not really an adaptation of Faust, so nobody needs to read Faust to understand Festa. I don't even think it's a particularly good play. The Germans can fight me about that if they want, although I know many a German school kid has been forced to read it in school and probably also has some strong feelings. But basically, Fester is using this character of Gretchen, this woman who, for lack of a better way of saying it, has none of the information and all of the consequences of the play. And so we're looking at a world in which she gets a little bit of that information ahead of time. And what happens when you decide you're not really interested in the path that life has been set out for you? You're not really interested in a system that dictates what your narrative should be. Are you able to fight back against that system? Are you able to change your own narrative? Do you even want to? How much work does go into that? Do you need help? Can you do it alone? These are kind of the bigger questions that we're exploring. But really what it's going to look like is we're doing a lot of physical theater. We're doing a lot of movement. Our cast, as has been stated, is majority female, majority non-binary. Same with our creative team. Out of 11 people on the team, we only have 2 people who are not marginalized gender. This is the same in terms of migration as well. Everybody on the cast and crew is not from the UK, except for 2 people. So a lot of our thoughts about power structures are coming from the lens of immigration and gender. But of course, we've also got cast members and crew members who are queer. We've got a lot of global majority cast and crew. We've got cast and crew who are working class. Like, we're kind of looking at the intersections of all of these identities. Everybody's had a way of struggling with the power systems around them for one reason or another. And it's interesting to stick everybody in the room and say, well, what does that look like? How do we reconcile with that without making something that feels preachy or making something that feels too on the nose? How do we just let that be the undercurrent under the piece, which at its heart is just about a young woman who wants to be free and wants to be able to determine the path that her life takes without somebody else saying, well, you're a woman, you're in this situation, so you've got to be this way. That's just the way life is because that's who you are. So we're kind of figuring out what it means to destroy that, what it means to actually tear a world to pieces. Does that mean that she's literally tearing things down? We've got lots of embroidery threads right now that are getting stretched across. People that look like walking glitches, movement that changes as you step in and outside of the bounds of the play. We're really playing with all the different facets of what it means to kind of be in something, be in a world, and then be out of it, be forcibly out of it, and being forcibly back into it. It's very vague, but again, we're still kind of figuring it out.
Yeah, if you're devising a show as you're going along with it, it's very difficult. It's a very horrible question to start with on our part, actually. Tell us about the show you haven't finished entirely making yet.
It's great, though, yeah.
Yeah, the process of devising is not something I've done for many, many years now, but I did enjoy it a lot when I did it, and having just the potential to change everything in one day. Like, you can just go, yeah, let's just change all of this. And having the freedom to do that is really interesting. So you sort of mentioned before that it's not an adaptation directly. So what level of was there a point where you decided it's not going to be an adaptation, or was it always on the cards as a sort of very loose sort of taking something from that and making something entirely different?
It was always going to be super loose. There was never a single point when I was like, I want to do Faust. Faust is just there mostly. It could have been any play, to be honest. This is a problem throughout classic and contemporary plays, literature, that there is a play written by someone who is part of that system of power, usually a white cis straight man. So it could have been Shakespeare, it could have been Marlowe, it could have been any number of contemporary playwrights who I won't name because they're still alive. So it could have been anything. It didn't have to be Faust. We just picked Faust because it had a nice aesthetic to it. I like this character of Mephistopheles. I think also because it begins quite crudely, there's a bet made between, like, basically God and the devil about who can turn Faust against his own beliefs. And there's something about the callousness of 2 people in power just going, well, let's just make this into a bet, like, for fun.
Yeah.
And then Gretchen is the one who has the she's not even supposed to be involved in the first place, but she somehow gets dragged into all of this and her life is ruined. But no, like, she's the only one that has the consequences, really. And in the end, Faust is like, well, will you forgive me? And she goes, yeah, I guess I'll forgive you. And then he's saved and that's it. So, you know, not only is she the one that bears all the consequences, she actually absolves him of any consequences he might have had to face just because he asked nicely. And so while it could have been any play, Faust has a pretty clear cut.
Yeah.
Narrative. So that's all we were really interested in. It won't be about Faust at all, but it will have that thread of, this is a character who's kind of just been put in the narrative to absolve someone else of their responsibility.
Something I was interested in hearing more about is you said that all of the artists and creatives aren't from the UK. So how did you come together originally to start life, even to get in the room to start making this piece?
So I knew from the beginning that I wanted a lot of migrant theater makers in the room, because I am a migrant theater maker myself, and because I think that has been, that's definitely a way of looking at a power structure quite literally. Being an outsider, being someone who doesn't belong, I think that's quite poignant, and I think it matters for the story. So some of the people who are on the team I knew from the drama program I went to, some of the people I had met doing other shows, some folks on the cast and creative team I met through everybody's favorite Twitter, because that's sort of just how people come together. Some people were recommended to me. Some people, I knew somebody who knew somebody who said, so-and-so is amazing. Why don't you bring them in? So it kind of ended up being an eclectic mix of me just going, I want some migrant people who move. Does anybody know anyone? And sure enough, everybody knew somebody. That's the best part about
community theater.
Yeah, the community responded. And that's really what it came out of, which was really fun. And some folks that I've worked with before who I get to bring back for this, folks that I haven't worked with before, because it's always sort of not quite been the right show and we're looking for the right one. And finally, this is the right one, which is an amazing feeling to kind of be circling the wheel with someone for years and finally be like, no, this is it. The timing lines up, the stars are aligned. This is the show we get to do together.
It's finally all coming together.
Yeah.
So how has a lot of the rehearsals been shaped, actually, Megan, during however long the process has been, obviously, given the situation, well, right across the world? Has a lot of that work been done in person, or has it been done like we're chatting today via Zoom, or has that kind of process worked up until now?
There's sort of two parts to the process. We're still really early on in the actual like rehearsals. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of been a lot of people separately finding their access points in. We're not really having any big Zoom meetings. We're kind of just like emailing bits back and forth. What are you interested in? Send me a song, send me a painting. I'm kind of sending mood boards back and forth. We've got some like Google Slides, especially with the designers. We have all these Google Slides. We've just been, every time anyone sees anything interesting, you know, you screenshot an Instagram post, you put it on the slides, just anything and everything that could possibly be related or interesting. We have been throwing it up into the Google Drive. And then now the physical rehearsals kind of get to be a synthesizing of all of that. And some of it ends up being total crap. Some of it you're like, yep, that was a cool picture that I saw that I thought was going to be useful. And it's garbage. It's done nothing for us.
It's always the way.
Yeah. But that's the joy of it. It's basically the theatrical equivalent of kind of everybody goes out on their own. They pick up everything they need. And then we get into the room together and we throw a bunch of spaghetti at the wall and we see what sticks. And some of it does, and a lot of it doesn't. And some of it we think sticks, and then it actually falls off a couple minutes later.
Yeah.
Keeps it very fresh. Very fresh.
Yeah. It is very fresh. You kind of never know what you're going to get, which is, as a director, really terrifying, because you have to reconcile with knowing that you're not going to know. Mm. But it's also really great, because the things that you don't know, the things that you can't plan for, are often the best things and the things that you end up keeping. So it's scary. You have to just trust. There's so much trust. You have to just trust that everything is going to be okay. And, you know, you lay awake at night going, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And it usually is.
Well, that sounds amazing. So if people wanted to keep up with the show and with the company and everything that's going on with it, where do people look on socials and websites and various things?
Yeah. So the best way to keep up with us is probably on our Instagram, which is at Half Pace Theater. We've also got Twitter, at Half Pace Theater, and Facebook, it's just Half Pace Theater. It's on a page. I'd say the Instagram is probably the best way. We're posting. We've got all of our cast announcements on there. We've got all the show info on there. We're going to start posting rehearsal photos, behind the scenes info. It's going to be very exciting. So yeah, those are probably the best. Twitter and Instagram are probably the best two ways to keep up with us.
Amazing. Fantastic. Right. And just say one more time when the show is and where it is.
So it's 13th and 14th August, which is Friday and Saturday, at 4:00 p.m. each day at the Cockpit Theater.
Well, it's been great to chat to you today, Megan, and hear a little bit more about the company and the work and Fester itself. And we wish you good luck with the with the show, and hopefully it'll go as well.
Yeah, best of luck.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's been great chatting with you guys.
It's a pleasure.
So that marks the end of this episode of the Talking Theatre podcast, and a massive thank you to all of our artists for taking the time to speak with us today. We hope that it has been fun and exciting and helpful for you. And just remind everybody, Tom, where the best place is for people to get some tickets.
Yeah, so if any of these shows have sort of piqued your interest, whether it be the longer chats we've had or little snippets we've thrown in between as well, if you want to go to the Camden Fringe website, you can get most of the information for these shows there. But if a particular one has caught your interest, make sure to catch what theatre they're at, and there may be a bit more information at that theatre. And who knows, maybe there'll be something else at that theatre that you might be interested in, and you can make a weekend of it or something. Who knows? But the Camden Fringe website is the best place to get everything you need.
And we certainly enjoyed making these episodes and having a chat to one of the three artists involved. And again, we just want to reiterate the best of luck to them in both their processes and the shows themselves. As we said to them, we'll hopefully be able to see as many as possible. And we hope that some of you listeners as well will also get the chance to see some of these productions. But to round off, we hope that you have enjoyed this episode. And if you have, then why not become a part of the Talking Theatre podcast community by subscribing to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, you can also drop us a 5-star review and leave us a comment about who you'd like to see us speak to in future episodes.
And you can also stay up to date with whatever it is we're up to, whether it be a call out for advertisement like we've done this episode or anything else we're doing on Twitter and Instagram at the Talking Theatre podcast. And as well as that, if you're interested in collaborating with us on an episode, you can email us at thetalkingtheatrepodcast@gmail.com and we will get back to you.
Exactly. So all that's left to say is thank you very much for listening, and we hope to see you all next week. Goodbye.
Adios.